Hello, today we're going to look at efficient streaming language models with attention sinks by researchers of MIT, Meta, and Carnegie Mellon University. This paper proposes a pretty simple idea to solve a problem that exists when you try to take a generative large language model and just let it run forever, mainly beyond the window that has been trained on. So if you want to continuously let such a model run, you either have to do some trade-offs in order to make that fast, or you have to do a lot of recomputation in order to keep its quality up. But you can't really have both. And this paper investigates this and discovers that there's an interesting property with any token that's kind of at position zero during pre-training. And that serves as a so-called attention sync, which kind of keeps the attention scores and the softmax distribution stable and yada yada. We'll get into it, what it does. But the end effect is that this paper delivers a more efficient method to let language models run beyond their initially trained context window and not suffer any performance hits either in speed or in perplexity from that. So what is the problem? The problem is the following. Let's say you train with attention. You train a language model with an attention mechanism. And these squares here are what they're supposed to tell you is, how does that work as your sequence gets longer and longer and longer? So we'll go through one here. So you have a few tokens, token, 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 token. And let's say you have a pre-trained language model that you now run inference with. So the first token, these are just slots by now. The first token just attends to itself. All right. The second token attends to itself and the first token. The third attends to these two and so on until the last attends to like all of the previous ones. That's why what we usually call the attention mask, the causal attention mask, is a lower triangular matrix where it essentially says, okay, the first token only attends to itself. How's that? How do we read this? Ah, maybe here. The first token only attends to itself. So one attends to one. And then the second token attends to the first and to the second and so on. Maybe that's the way to read it. Let's see. We'll figure it out when we get there. The problem is obviously that if you want to run inference now on another token right here, this at some point you get to the limits of your memory, of what your memory can handle. As you all know, this thing here has quadratic complexity, and therefore going beyond, I don't know, 4,000, 8,000 tokens nowadays is just kind of beyond what the hardware can do. And also it's not trained for that. So you can do something with position encodings, but usually once you go beyond the context window of training, either your hardware blows or the model's not trained for it and so on. So that's just kind of a no-go. So what do you have to do when you want to just keep running inference here? There's an easy way, which is if I want to run inference on this token, let's just only consider essentially this here to be the previous sequence. So forget about this token. Let's only consider these ones. And now I can infer this one. And then let's only consider these ones. And then I can infer this one, right? So this sort of sliding window to look back on, almost like a recurrent neural network in a way. So this actually works. This works pretty well. And this paper says, yeah, this works pretty well. What's the problem? The problem is performance, namely speed. So see, what you can do when running inference in these models is you can build up a so-called KV cache or key value cache, however you want to call it. But essentially the principle is this. Since, let's say, the third token only looks back at these two tokens in all the layers, right? You have many different layers in your transformer, but no matter what layers, because of the causal attention, they only ever look back. That means whether you inference the 10th token here or the 15th, they can look back at stuff, you know, that was previous. But that third token here can only ever look backwards. OK, Okay, so even if I inference a token down the line right here through the layers, it's never that I have bidirectional attention. I only have unidirectional attention. Now that's kind of a flaw of these GPT style transformers, and we do it so we can train them more efficiently. Because if this one, it's totally conceivable that if I inference the 15th token right here, that in layer one, this token could actually, let's say this token in the next layer could look, could put some attention on the 10th token here, right? And then in the next layer, the 12th token could put some attention here. And then in the next layer, the 15th token could put some attention here. That's totally conceivable from a from an algorithmic perspective. The problem is I can't train this efficiently. I have to train each token separately. Whereas if I restrict my attention to only ever go backwards, no matter what, right, then I can essentially use each token in a sequence as a training example. So a 15 token sequence gives me 15 training examples at the same time for free. And that's the idea behind behind using causal attention. And because of that, whether I inference the 10th token or the 15th token, that third token is only going to look at the second and first token, and also these, they remain constant. So all the computation in all the layers I've done for this essentially remains constant from here on out. And all the computation of the fourth token essentially remains constant from the fourth token out, and so on. So I only actually ever have to compute the all the layers of the new token I want to inference, because that can surely look at all the tokens previously, but none of the past tokens are going to change anything because they can only look back. And so you see, you can cache all of this. Once you've run the inference for a token, you can cache all of it through time. Now, this breaks down as soon as you do what we mentioned above here. So as soon as you drop out that first token, what happens? Well, look at this third token right here. It based its own, you know, computations upon looking back on that first token. Now, that first token is no longer there. So its computation is kind of wrong, because we now say only this here is our new sequence. And therefore, this third token, which is now the second token, can only look back at this token right here and nothing else. So we need to update its computation, because the past is no longer the same. And therefore, our assumption of we never have to update it again is invalid. And that means we have to essentially recompute all of the tokens here for every single step. Because in every single step, we're going to modify the past by one token, which invalidates the cache for everything that comes later. And that is the conundrum right here. We can do this sliding window attention. However, we will, in order to make correct computations, we will have to recompute every single time the essentially the entire attention, you know, the entire attention matrix and so on. And that's kind of slow. That's much slower than keeping it all in cache. So what people have done is they simply said, screw it, we will not recompute. We will just keep the caches here, you know, this token, it just keeps its cache, and it will just deal with it, right? It's even more beneficial, because it's kind of as if that token could still look back, even though that stuff is no longer in context. If we keep the cache around, it's kind of like, you know, it gets that information right now. And then the only issue is that this new token here can't look back at the first token, right? That's going to be the only information path that's blocked. But keeping the cache around essentially is like, you know, as far as this token is concerned, we still have those old values in scope, but not as far as the new token is concerned. I hope that explains it like a little bit. So if we keep the cache, just if we don't keep the cache around, then the third token can only look at the second token, no longer at the first token. And also the 15th token can only look at the second, the third, and so on token, and no longer at the first token. However, its internally consistent. It's like, this is a sequence, right? And within the sequence, it's entirely consistent. It's just that, you know, you don't see further back than your length. When you keep the cache around, it is as if the second and third token could still look back onto the first token. However, only the new, the 15th token, is now blocked from looking back at the first token, which is apparently a problem. So what this paper says, what this paper proposes, is if you do this, it doesn't work. Like, if you do this, you'll suffer terrible, terrible consequences. That's just results from their experiments. Their hypothesis is to say, look, that the first token serves as a kind of a special, almost like a regularization thing, where the first token absorbs all of the attention energy, or all of the attention that is not allocated to any other token. So when the next layer of the 15th token queries all the things that are here, right, it does so by multiplying the keys with the values of each, so its key with all the values of each of the tokens, and then it runs a softmax across that, not the key with the value, sorry, the key, it multiplies its query with the keys of each one. And then it runs a softmax across that. And the softmax always needs to sum up to one. And therefore, the hypothesis is these models during training have learned to allocate extra, like attention they don't need, out of that budget of one. So they have, it's almost like they have a budget of one, and they have to allocate it to different tokens in the sequence. Now, that doesn't always add up to one, what they want to do. So they have learned to allocate that extra bit here to just some token. So they just throw it onto some token. And because the first token is always there during training, because it has position encoding 0, right? That's always there. It has just learned to allocate it to that. Right. No matter what the token is, because it has a position of 0, it's the first token, and because that is always there during all of the training sequences, because of how we train, it has learned that, I'll just dump all my attention onto that. Now, in practice, it's going to dump it onto the first few tokens, but still, that's what the paper hypothesizes, and they demonstrated well during experiments. I wonder, though, how, you know, because I wonder maybe a secondary explanation, but maybe that's not too good. Because let's say you're the 15th token, right? You can look back at the third token here, but not at the first one. However, the third token contains information about the first token due to its cache, right? It can, in fact, look back. Oh wait, that's the wrong drawing. I want this was the drawing I made for that situation. So the 15th token can look back at the third token, but not at the first one. Yet the third token contains information about the first token. So it's conceivable that the 15th token in a lower layer learns from the third token about the existence of a token that has some information that would be valuable to the 15th token, yet in later layers it's going to try to access that, yet it can't, because it can't find it, because it's not in scope. This would be an alternative explanation of why the windowed attention doesn't work. However, what speaks against it is that they can actually replace the first token with kind of any value at all, like a new line value or a null character, and the phenomenon still occurs. So their hypothesis, I would say, is kind of solid, even though there will be alternatives. So I hope you understand a little bit the problem that they say exists in these models. They learn to use the zero position token as sort of a, you know, like a collector of unused energy during attention. And when that zero position falls out of scope, they don't know what to do So the attention allocation is all out of whack because that zero position that they would usually allocate all of that extra attention to is no longer there, and therefore they break. And that's what you see during their experiments. So their experiments, they have done that, and these are very cool. So for example, these are all models that are just trained plain language modeling with some context length. Now, I apologize, the quality here is a bit shady, but this is Llama 2 7B parameters on the bottom with very faint lines you see here. This is the size of the KV cache, and actually this here is the maximum length that was used during training, maximum sequence length. The KV cache has nothing to do with training, that's just a thing that people do during inference. So you can see that if you use dense attention, which means I just attend to the entire past, then it, as I go up with the input length, as soon as I go past that line, the pre-trained length, it shoots up. So the perplexity immediately shoots up because it's just not been trained on that long. If I use window attention, which is the thing where I said, okay, you just window, you drop the first one out, and you just no longer have it in scope. All right. At that point, as soon as the KV cache is filled up, you'll shoot up in perplexity. Now, the remedy to that, they say, is this sliding window with recomputation. That's what we discussed initially. What if I just say, well, this is my new sequence now, and I just recompute that? Well, then, and you can't see that here because it's exactly overlapping with the red line, but then you stay at low perplexity, which makes sense, right? Essentially, you just get a fresh sequence and you're saying, please predict the next token of that. And whether that sequence is from the beginning of a book or from the middle of a book, you don't really care because the language model training also has been sort of trained like this. So there is no problem. However, we mentioned you always need to recompute. Now, their method, which they call streaming LLMs, achieves the exact same perplexity. So the lines are completely overlapping for these models. Yet they can use a cache and they can efficiently only recompute the latest token. How do they do that? They call that attention sinks. Essentially, they analyze a few models and they see, okay, that's how the hypothesis develops. Yeah, we look at layer 0 and layer 1, and we kind of see a lot of local attention scores right here. So tokens, you can see, so the band here in the middle essentially says, tokens usually attend to kind of their recent past. So token number 15 attends to tokens number 14, 13, and 12. If 12, I'm good at counting. I can count. And as you go up the layers, you kind of see this pattern of more and more attention being allocated to the very first token. And yeah, here, as you go, these are higher layers, and you just see like one long red line. Red means very high attention values allocated to the zero position tokens. And so they develop this hypothesis. What if we do this? What if we just kind of keep that zeroth token around, and we do this sliding window thing right here where we just keep the caches as they were, but we always keep the zero position in the cache. We always do that, and essentially the whole caching mechanism then works as such. There is a picture somewhere. Works as such that, okay, let's say the context length here is 8 tokens, so that just fits into token. Generating token 7 can look back at all. Now, when I generate token 8 here, I'm not going to drop the first one. No, I'm going to drop here the fourth one. So I have 4 attention sink tokens and a sliding window of 4 tokens that is local. And so that attention sink is always going to stay there. And the other ones, I use this sliding window technique. For both, I just keep the cache around. The first ones, because they're the same tokens. And for the sliding window ones, because we do that whole, we don't care about dropping the previous ones away. We don't care that the cache isn't exact, let's say, for that sequence. So this is going to be the new sequence right here. We are just dropping these middle tokens away here. And that's that what they call streaming LLMs, and these things are what they call attention sinks. And that seems to work well. I've just shown you. That actually gets you the benefit of caching. They say it's, what, 22 times faster than if you recompute every time. So that gets you the benefits of caching while not exploding your perplexity. They say they have to keep a bunch of tokens around. They have some hypotheses around that. What they also do is they say, well, is it really the case that, you know, what is it about that first token or the first tokens? And they do some experiments along that line. Especially what they do is they just kind of replace the first tokens by new line characters, and they still get essentially the same results. So without the attention sinks, very big perplexity. But with the attention sinks, very small perplexity. And with the attention sinks just always being new line symbols, also very small perplexity. So that tells them it's probably not about the content, it's probably about the position encoding of those things. And yeah, that's what leads them to their, let's say, their method right here, is that once we add the attention sinks, you can see that here, so no attention sink, very big perplexities also here. With attention sinks, small perplexities, and sometimes you have to add more than one. Then they ask, can we actually train that? So can we, so this is just inference, right? Can we actually add some sort of an extra token at the beginning of each training sample to act as an attention sink, like just a null token, like a special token, so that, you know, the thing can always allocate all the attention it wants there? And the answer is indeed yes. So if you add a, what they call a zero sink, which is they just always add one token that's kind of a null token without training it, they do remedy the giant perplexity. So you can see here one attention sink with the zero sink. They do remedy it, but not fully. If they only have one token, they need two tokens or four tokens to actually remedy the situation and get to the same, let's say, perplexity as the vanilla model here. However, if they train the model to use these attention sinks, they can get the same benefit with even a single token at the beginning. So that's just a null token that we always append at the beginning. And you don't even have to do much more than that. You just make sure that it's always there for every training sample, because then the model will learn to allocate extra things there. And that's essentially the method. Now, one thing that I found interesting is that what they say right here. They say, when determining the relative distance and adding positional information to tokens, streaming LLM focuses on positions within the cache rather than those in the original text. This distinction is crucial for streaming LLM's performance. For instance, if the current cache has tokens 0, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8. So let's say I'm going to inference token 9. So this bottom line right here, that's the situation. So we have 0, 1, 2, 3. Those are our attention sync tokens. And then 6, 7, 8 are the local tokens around token 9 that, you know. So this is the cache currently. And they say, if that's the case, if we want to predict the ninth token, the positions assigned are 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, rather than the positions in the original text, which would be 0, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we tell the model, actually, we're not decoding the ninth token, we're decoding the seventh token. And the local tokens are 4, 5, 6, and the attention sinks are 1, 2, 3. It's all just like, essentially you just make it believe that you just cut out the middle and you actually make it believe that that's one continuous piece of text. And they say this is crucial. Now, it's kind of orthogonal a little bit to the idea, because so you see the zero would be there no matter what, right? The zero position embedding is there, so therefore that can't have an influence. But maybe this break here has an influence, right? Or what I also suspect is that, let's say this here, you're actually running it for a long time, this here is 50,000 and something, then the language model, it might be trained to look back a certain amount or to look back at certain tokens relative to its positional embeddings, and that may just break. Now, I don't know, but you always kind of make it believe you're within that original context window and it's one continuous sequence. And that's where I'm asking, and that's something that I don't see in this paper. And if they've done it, or if someone else has done it, then I apologize because I didn't see it. But that leads me to believe, what if I do this thing right here? So the window attention, but I always just assign the positions like they assign the positions there. As far as I understand, they can change the position encodings even as the cache progresses, which, okay, but if they can do it here, why can't they do the same here? And what would it be? Because the main culprit in the window attention is that position zero falls away, right? But if we always renumber and always say, well, no, actually position zero is right here. That's position zero, right? That's not position eight. What would happen? Maybe I've just overlooked something and they have actually done this. That is completely possible. But it seems to me, if this is super important to have this contiguous sequence for the streaming LLM that starts at zero, what would happen if you do that at the window attention? Again, I could have overlooked them actually doing exactly this in the experiments, but I don't necessarily recall that. In any case, they now train. So they evaluate, obviously, their method. So they have a bunch of benchmarks, which is really cool. They show, okay, we can let it run for a really long time. It speeds it up a lot. They have their own benchmarks where they do even multi-step interactions that go over a long period of time. And they visualize now, again, this the trained models. So the model on the left-hand side is one that we've seen before in lower to local attention in the lower layers, and then sort of more and more attention to the initial zeroth token in the higher layers. When they train with the sync token, and by the way, if any author looks at this, the I think left and right here are mixed up. So I'm pretty sure right is with the sync token and left is without the sync token. But if they do that, then you can see even starting from layer zero, attention is, you know, put onto the zeroth token as you, and that's kind of a consistent thing. So that means that it's working. So the training is working. A lot of attention is put on the zeroth token. And even so on layer two, you can see that there's still a lot of attention on the first few tokens, right? Which is why they have to include multiple attention sinks. But if you actually train with an attention sink, that much faster consolidates to just the zeroth attention sink token. So I would say the hypothesis is pretty solid. The experiments show that the hypothesis has probably some truth to it. The solution is pretty intuitive, I would say, and solid, and is totally workable. This can totally be built into today's inference frameworks. And yeah, extensive experiments. And yeah, that's essentially all. It's a neat paper. It's cool to read if you're newer and want to read in a more. It's very, very well written. And yeah, that's all I have to say. Let me know what you think about this. The only thing that I can still think is that I was thinking of this model called Big Bird. Big Bird. That kind of did the same thing, but for bidirectional attention. So their attention matrix essentially looked like, okay, we have this band here, this diagonal band, and then we also have always attention to the initial tokens, and then also some random attention in between. And there, so this is more like BERT-style models, right, for embeddings and stuff like this. Their reasoning was, you know, the first tokens are probably kind of important for stuff, and therefore we always include the first tokens. And not ever about softmax or anything like this. And there are some things that are conceivably different. For example, in bidirectional attention, all the tokens can actually attend to the first token, and the first token can attend to all the tokens. So they are just another, let's say, token that can attend to stuff, and it's perfectly conceivable that actually the semantics of the initial tokens of a sequence, like the beginning of a sentence, like what, where, or something like, you know, like the first word of a sentence is, or the first words are sometimes quite informative. And also, I think during training of these BERT-style models and so on, it was much more the case that every single example had the context essentially filled up, and there wasn't too much padding, as far as I understand. But maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe one should go back, look at Big Bird, and say, hey, what if we, you know, just kind of replace the first, these token of global attention here with some new lines? And what if we actually train with these attention sinks? And yeah, that would be interesting to find out. And maybe it might revise an old work. And maybe it might revise old work and gain new insights into why a model like Big Bird has had a higher performance than, for example, BERT. All right, that's it for me. I'll see you around. Bye-bye.